All Eyes on Fishing with Mitch Peterson, Josh Sheldon, and Brad Qualley, leading you to the next level.
Hey everybody, welcome back to All Eyes on Fishing. Today we're going to be talking about casting to structure. We've talked in the past, a bunch of different podcasts, wrote some blogs and some articles and stuff about casting. We're going to talk about very specific structure. We've had a podcast out there. It was bass fishing for walleye. There was a lot of casting where we talked about jigs and cranks. Tonight we're going to focus on specifically more on different types of structure, what to be looking for,
and how to break it down.
Yeah, how to break it down. Different things that we're doing when we're looking at structure, how we're kind of summarizing that structure coming up to it when you're looking at your lake map or when you're pulling up to an area, and how we make our decisions on how we're going to start.
Yep. And a lot goes into it. I mean, I know that some people might have heard this and been like, oh, what are you talking about? I go up and I cast. You know, My grandpa used the beetle spin, and that's what I use. And that's, you know, that's
that might
true.
Be the ticket.
That might be the way to go. But, man, it can get complicated trying to break it down and give yourself the most productive way to attack a piece of structure. And when we talk about pieces of structure, right, we're talking about points, islands, sunken rock humps, transition areas, like a roadbed, roadbed, or I mean anything that is going to hold fish, that is going to catch your attention from your electronics as you're going over and you see arches centered around something, whatever it is down there. Because I mean, who knows?
And it's usually one of those things. We're not talking mid lake structure.
No, but it can be.
It can be if it's shallower. But if you're fishing 60 feet of water and you see a boulder down there, you're not casting. If the boulder's 15 feet up, you're not going to cast. Well, maybe you would cast it.
Well, you could do moonshines or jigging wraps, blade baits.
Okay,
yeah,
I take that back. Yeah. Because I got to think, I go, you know, I'd probably use a moonshine.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're talking, okay, so scratch that. But no, predominantly when we started this podcast, I was thinking about
shallower stuff.
Like islands or breaks or trees or things like that. But. Yeah. I guess you could do
We're talking 15 feet or shallower. How's that?
Yeah, we can start there.
And then we'll talk another time, some other podcast about casting deep structure, because we'll go on and on and on.
Right.
And on. Well, so let's just talk shallower structure.
Yeah, let's start out with picking the structure, right? You got to pick a good structure, because chances are you're not going to mark anything on your graph when it comes to this structure. It's just going to look good or be in the right area. Mm-hmm. So this time of year, main lake points are pretty key. As these fish are transitioning out of the spawning areas, they're stopping off on main lake points, which I have seen to a very fine degree the last two tournaments I fished, where main lake points produced the biggest and the most fish, which was just very just perfect walleye wisdom 101. I mean, it was crazy, right? And but before they start moving back into bays and secondary points, now it's kind of the tail end, and they're moving every day, so you got to catch it. But what kind of structure is going to catch your eye, and how you're going to start breaking it down? And I'll give you an example. For me, a lot of the lakes I fish when I do these tournaments, it's submerged, some trees that are not all the way submerged, but they're, you know, the water's 3, 4, 5, 6 feet up the tree, and those trees are out in the water, and then all of a sudden the trees stop, and it's either gravel or large river rock or even bigger rock or something like that. But that is a great place when you pull up to say, okay, how am I going to fish this?
Okay, so we'll talk about fishing that structure.
Okay.
I also want to, just so you guys can think about it, I can't even count the amount of times that when we're going to a lake, we also look at structure on, let's just say it's like gravel to sandy type.
Yes, transition.
Area. Transition, but what I'm talking about is the different color of rock on the shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
That is a huge transition for me and Mitch.
It totally
huge.
Is.
Huge.
Yep.
And I don't know if you fish that, but there's a lot of times when we see, if you're looking at a shoreline, and it's got the right things, right? It's got a good break that could hold fish. And you are looking at the shoreline, and there's a darker clay surface, darker pebble surface, darker whatever it is, coming into that water from the shoreline, even if the depth isn't different, 5 feet over,
right,
we start fishing that break, that structure of color, different color of rocks right there, because mm-hmm. it seems like it really holds fish and work from there.
Right.
Are they in the darker, they prefer in the darker rocks or the lighter rocks? But we right. break it down a lot of times when we're driving shorelines. We are looking at the way rocks have came off of the shoreline to
sure.
make its own little break or own or not necessarily break, but its own little mini point.
Yep.
Or if it's just different colors.
Yep.
So
yep.
And we'll talk about both those.
Yep. Yep. And a big thing for me is out here we have a lot of what I call river rock round rock structure. Right. It's those if a river coming into going through the Rockies is going to dry up, it's going to have a lot of those big round river rocks. Right. And it's what you see in people's yards, right? Well, that is primo walleye structure here. I mean, that is, first off, it can be an indicator of the original river channel, which is always a great place to fish in these reservoirs because it holds current, fish, bait, all that other kind of good stuff. It'll have trees growing on the sides where the banks used to be, things like that. It's always a good place if the water level is right. Sometimes it's too deep, sometimes it's too shallow, so you have to kind of hit it right. But that is a great transition area. If you can find, like you guys were talking about, a spot where those trees that grew up, let's say the prairie comes right to the edge and the water has worn away the topsoil of prairie and below it is that river rock, and those trees have come right up to the edge of that river rock. If you can find that area that is 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, 5 feet of water this time of year, that is a fish producing mega spot mm-hmm. because it's warmer. There's bait going across it. There's bait hiding in the brush and trees.
But that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's why we usually try to find that different color rock.
Right.
Like, not just one rock. I'm talking, it's yeah. noticeable.
Yeah.
Because that water is going to warm up faster. It means right. the plants are going to grow faster. It's going to hold more bait fish. So yeah. we start fishing the edge of that right into yeah. it, working that shallow area. Can they be over in the less colored rock? Yes, but that's where we're going to start.
Right.
Because of what I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when that stuff in the plant, the vegetation is starting to grow up and you're getting a hatch of bait fish.
Or bugs.
Or
don't
bugs.
Don't forget the bugs. Yeah. While they're full
well, they're
of bugs.
Gonna, they're going to be it where they can find shelter first. And that shelter, everybody knows that you have a darker surface on the ground. It starts warming that water up, maybe only a degree, but the way it reflects in there, you're going to start getting right. that weed growth a little bit more. You're
well,
going
to get an easy
places.
Meal.
It is.
Easy meals all
so
over
that's,
there.
I don't know how many times I've been out taking guys fishing and I'm like, that looks like a good area. And they're like, why? I go, well, look at the way that the dirt for
right.
whatever rock comes into the water.
Right.
It's darker there.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's this time of year. Now, flip side, August, no, because
yeah.
now it's too growing up. I'm going to fish the other side.
Full of weeds, full
of weeds, but
full
now
of hydrilla.
You know,
full of...
Now you know the lighter side grew started later, so yeah. you're going to get a couple weeks of fishing to where now you can at least work that area.
Right, mm-hmm. right, yeah.
You know, for me, the key thing with structure too that we're kind of overlooking is access to deep water. So that's why we bring up
right.
main lake
right.
points. You know, that's kind of what that's referring to, is that they've got access to deeper water where you might have this bay that's 8 feet for, 400 yards back
right.
there in a great rocky point, but that doesn't mean that rocky point may be holding fish in that bay. Now, it might, I'd probably
right.
go check it out, but really it's the points we're talking in areas on the shoreline stuff that, yep, there is deep water
right.
Close to them.
But which is very... It is very dependent on time of year and water temperature. I would say when the water temperature is anywhere between 50 to 60, they're going to want that access to deeper water, because as we have seen this year, a lot of cold fronts moving through, late snow, late ice coming off. Actually, the Midwest has been the same, late ice coming off. They are having access to that deep water because it's a little more stable right now. But they will come up and feed. They'll slide in, slide out. So that's this time of year. In another, right now, a week, they could be back in that bay, all the way back in that 8 foot, secondary point or whatever. And there's no access to deep water, but they don't care because it's bonanza time, right? Mm-hmm. They're hitting perch, crappie, shad, owl wives, whatever's back there. They're hammering them. And so I think you have to be careful that you will know. I mean, you will. You can fish a spot one day, and it has access to deeper water. It's a point, and it's got trees or whatever, brush, submerged willows, whatever. And the fish are there, and you're hammering them. You're hammering them on the bottom. And then come back the next day, and it's a nice warm day. The water warms up all day. And then you come back the next day, and you get one, maybe two fish all morning. Same spot where you caught 30 the day before. You're like, where in the hell did the fish go? Mm-hmm. Well, they're still there, but now they're pushed in up over the top of those willows. Now they're pushed up further up on that point into those submerged trees, right?
No, you're right. I think that we always start with that deep water mm-hmm. access and then work mm-hmm. from there.
You do, but yeah. if you go, but that's where a lot of people, I think, where they make their mistake, is they think, mm-hmm. oh, the fish aren't here, and they leave. Mm-hmm. The fish are there. They have pushed up. Well, I saw it perfect this weekend.
Okay, and I agree, but if we were going to, if I didn't believe that or whatever, mm-hmm. how do you know the fish are there? Can you see them on the sonar?
You won't be able to see them.
Okay, and it kind of goes into that, though, and they move up and down. You know, they're in and out, kind of like you mm-hmm. mentioned. Well, how much time should somebody spend working a structure before they beat it and go try another one, and then come back and try it again?
Right.
And you know, that I think is kind of a key thing, too.
Right. Well, I think, okay, so if you're fishing a main lake point, and it drops off, and you're looking at 10 to 15 feet of water, your sonar is going to be much more useful at that depth, right? Oh, yeah. You're going to get a better idea if those fish are sitting there, like, especially if you fish a spot 2 days in a row. Mm-hmm. If they're not there on the sonar, then I'm going to look up. I'm going to start pushing up. Because now your water temperature has gone from, let's say, 56 on day one to 62 at the beginning of day two. And now it's 66 by noon. Okay? Now, we know that's surface temperature, but still, that warm water's mixing in, you know. Mm-hmm. Those fish are going to be up, pushing up into the shore. If you just slide in and start casting, like we talked about on bass fishing for walleye, start casting paddle tails and swim baits and twister tails and jerk baits and crank baits. You start casting those up into shallower water at that time, those same fish and bigger fish are going to be up in there. And they're going to be better fish.
One thing that I think is kind of getting confusing too, I think for probably some folks too, and we're talking deeper water, it's not deep water. Like I was thinking about the last couple of years, we fished one lake out here that we are consistently, and it's this time of year, the water temperature is in that mid 60s, 60, 67 degrees, maybe even close to 70, that we are, when I'm talking deep water, we're parked in 8, casting up to 2,
sure.
and 2 boat lengths away, it's 13. Sure, that's right. That deeper water. We're not talking like main lake dropping down to 50, 60.
No, but I would even say, if it dropped down, I think of deeper more like 15 to 20.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what I would equate it with, and that 20.
But I just want to make sure I clear that up, because some folks are probably thinking, well, deep water, what is that? It's relative to what you're casting.
And how many times, and that's a great point. How many times have you guys heard guys say, you know, I saw those fish on the sonar down there at 25 feet, and I just can't get them to go? Well, because those aren't your active fish. You may get one or two out of that pod, but your active fish have pushed up.
They have.
And so if you see those fish at 20 or 25 and they're not interested, right? I mean, because we all can play that game, right? We can do jig and wraps,
there's
shivers.
There's a trick for that, and I want to bring it up, so don't let me
forget. Okay, so we can do, you know, we can do those blade baits. We can do those vertical type presentations or a jig and a minnow. And yeah, you're going to probably get a couple of those maybe. But when you're in this kind of transitional temperature range, you push up into that shallower water, and that's where you're going to find fish. Guys like Corey Springle, that's what he does well. I mean, he goes up and fishes those shallower areas.
The trick to that, though, is if you're fishing a main lake point, right? Now, you know there's fish there, and you're rolling into the spot. You're not burning in at 80 mm-hmm. miles an hour. You're rolling in. Be mindful of that, because especially if you fished a lake, a point mm-hmm. that's, you know, you're casting up to that 4 or 5, mm-hmm. 3, 4, 5 foot of water, and you're sitting in like 10 or 11 casting up. And when you're rolling in, if you're marking fish in that 25, look up, dude, because when you were catching those fish in that 8, 9 feet, when you were rolling in, you were probably occasionally marking fish in that 3, 4 foot. Yeah. It's a real quick echo because you're driving right over them.
Right.
But if you're starting to mark fish in that deeper water, when you're rolling up there in that 3, 4 foot, you know fish have pushed up, because those are your active feeders. You could catch those. Those fish would go if you're pulling a crank over them.
Right.
Right. But that's to me when I know to push in shallow. Mm-hmm. When I'm rolling into an area looking for those fish that are more suspended, because I know now fish are fishing that shallower column, and now they're going to cruise into that shallower bay to take advantage of all that bait fish and stuff.
Right. And when I say pushed up, I don't mean you have to immediately go up to 2 feet of water. I mean push up to that 10. If you see fish in 25, push up to that 10. Yeah, start your casting there, and then move up into you know, if you're not having any success there, then keep moving that boat in. I mean, I know a lot of walleye fishermen, they get gun shy when they start to move in shallower. They just, you know, all the stuff we've talked about before in the myth with, you know, walleyes won't bite during the day, and the sunlight and those big eyes and all that garbage. That is garbage. And they, year after year after year, I watch tankers come out of 2 feet of water and just wreck, you know, a crankbait, a swim bait, something like that. So if you push up and you get shallow and you fish that structure, and then it's important to look at wind blowing side. It's important to look at where there might be some current coming across, things like that. So when you're breaking down that structure, be mindful of, if you've had a north wind and this point is coming out from the west, that you're going to maybe want to fish that north side, because those fish are propped up getting bait as it sweeps across that point. So your presentation may be to sweep it across from the north, or go behind them and try to pull it towards them, you know, in their face. I mean, it does play a difference, you know.
Well, down in Pueblo, there's some real steep cliff walls, basically.
Yeah, shale.
And I'll tell you what, we'll fish on the east side of these fingers in the morning, longer, just because the shadow from that, you know, that cliff. So even that comes into play, like which side we
your structure is
on.
The shadow.
Right.
It really is.
It's an element of the structure for sure.
And I know we work that shadow all the way around that point. We'll end up on the other. If we're active fish and it's on.
Right.
During the day, we end up fish staying where that sun's moving. We'll actually go on the other side of that cliff or the other side of that point, working that shadow as long as we can.
Sure, sure.
And noon sucks.
Right, yeah, because everything's got sun.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah, see, and I like to do really some of the opposite. I like to find some of these shallower areas that we're talking about, especially where there's transition from rock to trees, you know, and even if for us, if the water's pushed up into the prairie a little bit, because that water's going to warm first. So that water is going to suck bait up. That water is going to have the fish pushing up into it. You're going to have the perch, the crappie. You know, you're going to have those different fish up in there first, because it's going to warm first. You know, topwater guys, that's where they go first, right? So I think for me, it's a little bit of both, you know. So if you guys are going to fish, let's say, an area that doesn't have any sort of vegetation, no weeds growing up, no trees in the water. It is, you know, kind of more like that Pueblo where it's got
Jackson, you mean?
Sure. It could be any one of these, right? It's either muddy. Well, it could be like these prairie lakes in Minnesota, right? Or like some of these Great Lakes where there's not really a whole lot of structure out there until you come up to like an island or something, or a rock, rock hump or some hump out there. How are you guys going to break down, let's say something that is not super deep, 10 feet, but it's a hump. You don't know what it's made out of, probably rock, could be, you know, who knows, but it is a hump under the water. If the water got low enough, it may even become an island. How would you break that down?
Well, if it's not real big, say it's as big as two pickups sitting next to each other.
Okay.
I'm going on top first. That's my target.
What are you going to use? Slip bobbers?
No, I'm going to probably cast a ripple chad.
Yeah. Crankbait?
I mean, sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess, you know, a twister tail or a ripple chad to start with.
Yeah.
If I'm start picking up fish, you know, a lot of times, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Right.
But if, say, I know there's fish there, but I can't get them to go on that, you bet I'd switch to a slip bobber next up.
Yeah.
Because it goes from that, you know, a little bit more aggressive presentation to live bait finesse instantly. And, you know, you're in the zone, you can control it.
Right. See, I would do both. I would throw out a slip bobber, and then I would start casting at the same time.
I would just cast so you jigs. Can see.
I would do both. I would
do a slip bobber and jigs.
Yeah, and jigs. And I would do, I would probably do a slip bobber and either a swim bait or a crankbait.
And the reason why I'm going to cast jigs, it's going to be limited. I can learn a lot of information from a jig because if I don't know that lake and I'm casting out there, I can, especially because I use a lot of the super lines like the fire line, sure, and crystal. When I cast that quarter ounce jig up onto that and I'm working it down, I can feel if that's timber. I can feel if that's gravel. Mm-hmm. I can feel if it's boulder. It gives me a good idea.
So are you going to jig it? Is that what
you're
doing?
I'm going to work it down, the structure, to figure out what that structure is. Yeah, I'll just pop it down the structure, scrape it on the bottom so I can start feeling what it is. And then that might change my game plan 20 casts later because I'm like, okay, over on the left side, it feels like there's a log over there. The rest is all gravel. So now I know where I can start pitching a crankbait and get a little more active, a little more aggressive.
See, I'm going to
put my slip bobber over by where that log is, something I'm not able to cast, but I can just slip in with my slip bobber.
I'm going to treat the plastic just like a crankbait. I'm going to cast it up there, and I'm going to slow reel it in.
I know, but you're also going to use that information.
Yeah, but I'm not going to hit bottom at all. The goal is to not hit bottom. I'm going to bring it in, you know, like I said, like just like a crankbait. I'm not going to go slow enough to where it hits bottom.
You're missing out on that, Josh, I think, because you don't know what that bottom is. Use that as an intel gathering. You can even if it's for 5 or 6 casts, you're assuming when you're making that cast that you are working that structure right. You don't know how the break works. You know what I mean?
I don't, but I'm looking for active fish. And I know, but I don't think jigging the fish off the bottom. I mean, you may be right. That may be one of them. But my first go-to is I'm going to treat it pretty much like a crankbait. Twister tail, paddle tail, whatever you want to throw out there, it's going to come in like a crankbait.
Well, the reality for me is, say, even if I've got that and I'm going to treat it like a crankbait, I'm probably going to let it hit the bottom and maybe pop it. Another cast, I'm going to, you know, let it drag on the bottom. Another one, I might keep it off the bottom and go. So I'm going to vary my retrieve to kind of change it up too. So I totally get what you're saying, Brad, but I kind of get the best of both worlds.
I'm just trying to figure out that structure.
Yeah.
And if I pick up a fish, great, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just the way it
is. Yeah, and then there's the other thing too, is when you're setting up your slip bobber, where do you set up your slip bobber at? Do you set it for the depth of what you think the top of the hump is? Or do you try to get it off the sides? See, that's the other question. That's why you have to figure out where you're going to cast. I would cast to the top and set my slip bobber off to the side because you can work that shallower area by reeling in, not getting snagged on the bottom, not doing that. You could do that with your cranks. You can do that with your swim baits. And then you can have that slip bobber just off to the side. Let's say the top of the mound or whatever you're fishing is 8 feet. And off to the base, it's 12. So I'm going to set that slip bobber somewhere around that 11-foot mark, and I'm going to run it off to the side. And I know, like you said, I'm feeling it out, right? So I'm going to cast it out. If the slip bobber doesn't go up, then I know I'm too shallow. I'm going to reel it in a little bit
until it goes up. Where the bottom is.
Now I know I'm on that edge. I'm going to let the slip bobber sit on that edge for those fish that are transitioning up and those aggressive, feeding, active fish on top. I'm going to go at it with the baits that are going to produce that strike. I mean, that's just me. I've seen it work a ton of times from other people and myself, and I just think that's a very solid way to break down a structure. But I'm with you 100%. There's nothing better than taking, let's say, a jig head, a round ball jig head, and putting on a leech or a half a crawler and just pitching it up there on top of that structure, and the second it hits bottom, a lot of times you'll whack those fish. Mm-hmm. So I love doing that too. But I think my first go is going to be a little bit quicker to try to figure it out, and then.
Well, I know one thing. After, you know, working that hump, I'm going to go work that one down there and another one down the shoreline and that point.
Right.
I'm going to come back, and I'm going to hit them all again, maybe an hour later.
Well, now you know it, too. Now you're going to change up your game plan on how you're going to fish it.
Yeah,
totally. You might come at a different angle and cast it completely.
Well, like you were saying, different sides, whether or not where the sun's at. I mean, I think the goal of this whole podcast is to, when you come up to a piece of structure that looks like it should be holding fish, don't be intimidated. Go in there with some confidence. Use your confident bait, whatever that is. Crankbait, swim bait, you know, whatever your confident bait is, go in there and start to break it down. Start out a little bit and work your way in.
Well, I think one of the goals I want listeners to take from this is, and we'll wrap it up here right after this, but my goal on this is when you're pulling up to a structure, whatever it is, don't just pull up because it's structure. Think about what that structure is and how you want to attack it. I mean, why are you picking that structure? Look at it.
Right.
If you're catching fish there, now look for other structure on that lake that mirrors that.
Yep. Is it a windblown side? Exactly. Is there a mud line?
Pay attention to what you're fishing. So there's several times that we fish a 1 foot break, and that's our structure.
Yep.
It's 1 foot.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And they'll be stacked right up against it.
And it happens to be non-windblown side.
Yep.
For whatever reason, there's current there. Well, I don't know, but
the walleyes didn't read the fishing book.
I'm telling you.
Critical concept. What is their problem?
I know, but repeat that. Pay attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. And I know you guys do too, I take everything into account. I use a weather app, and I look at which way the wind's been blowing the 5 days before I got there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I know, hey, listen, it's been predominantly out of the west. The east side may have more warmer water, and it may have more bait pushed up. So let's start on the east side of the lake just to begin with, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah.
But it's all starting points. You pick a starting point, you start to figure it out, and then you reproduce. You mimic what you learned, and that's how you catch fish throughout the
day. And what you have, you mimic what's not working,
right,
too.
Right, right.
Just because it's a main lake point, and if you're not catching fish, maybe it's time to push shallow. Yeah. Maybe it's time to change up tactics.
Right.
So, hey, guys, everybody, we'd like to thank you for listening to our podcast. Make sure you're sending it out to your friends and letting them know about All Eyes on Fishing. We've had a lot of good success here, and we want to keep it rolling. And send us your questions. We have a lot of questions that come our way, and the best way to do that is alleyesonfishing@gmail.com.
Yep. Appreciate the listens and all the questions, and it's fun interacting with you guys.
Tight lines, everyone.
Have a good night.
This has been All Eyes on Fishing. Thank you for joining us. Join us again next time, where we discuss all of your favorite fishing topics. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Check out our videos on YouTube or read our blog at alleyesonfishing.com. All Eyes on Fishing, leading you to the next level.